Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, some of you, actually several of you, asked for a hockey show. I've delivered somehow, some way. We're going to talk hockey here in April on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Today on the show, Jim Diamond is going to join us. He covers the Nashville Predators for the Associated Press and Rinkside Report. He is the co-author of My Toughest Face-Off. You can follow him at Diamond Hockey on Twitter. Also on Instagram at JimDiamond6. You can cover him. Then we're going to be joined by national hockey writer Josh Cooper. Josh, longtime friend of ours, based in Los Angeles now. You can follow him on Twitter at Joshua Cooper. He covers Los Angeles Kings a lot now, but he covers a lot of just national hockey. Once a national hockey writer for Yahoo. So we'll talk to Josh about the about hockey, about a lot of things actually. Talk to Jim mostly about the Preds. Josh about the Pittsburgh Penguins, some other things. If you like hockey, if you are remotely interested in hockey, this is a show for you. I'm kind of excited about it. It has turned out, frankly, a lot better than I thought it might, in large part because the guests were great and I didn't screw it up more than usual. First, before we get to all the guests, let's talk about Crystal. The Oxford Crystal is right next door to the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford, where you can get the $3 meal deal featuring the Chipotle Cheese Crystal. You can spice up your Crystal, the Chipotle Cheese Crystal, the Chipotle Cheese Loaded Fries, the Red Hot Slushy, which you might guess is made with Red Hots. You can also get the Party Packs, 24 packs of Crystals. If you are at home this weekend, maybe you're watching the NHL playoffs, maybe you are watching the NBA playoffs, you're watching Ole Miss Georgia baseball, whatever it may be. We've got all sorts of Crystal products for you there. Highway 6 West in Oxford. We are coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. He sends you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. Just a great deal. You get your quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop it around if you'd like, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, including me. And that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. And then it's up to you. Also, we'll make it, let you make this deal even better. It's up to you at the end of your deal. Tell Corey and the people at Clark Ford that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. Mention any of our family of podcasts, including, obviously, the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, and that's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. This podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage is located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's J-Lowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, whether that's HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. Now let's talk some Nashville Predators hockey. We taped this on Tuesday, so you're going to hear this. The series will be four games old. The Preds will either be up 3-1 on the Avs, or the series will be tied 2-2. But it's a more of a big picture look at hockey in Nashville. The Preds, their presence in Nashville. We talk about the Titans a little bit. We talk about MLS in Nashville, the prospect of Major League Baseball in Nashville, and more with Jim Diamond of the Associated Press. Hope you enjoy. Take a listen. All right, Jim, I really appreciate the time. Like I said before we got started, this is one of those hockey interviews that isn't going to be a whole lot about hockey. I'm going to ask you about Nashville and all that stuff in a minute. But first, I have to ask you about this. I've been following your Twitter feed. We're taping this. It's Tuesday afternoon. It's a little after 5:30. It's 2-1. The series, Preds and the Avalanche. I've been watching your Twitter feed during the series, and I have to ask you, tell me about the Skittles and the arrangement of the Skittles and what that's all about, because I'm curious.
Yeah, no, Teresa Walker, my boss with the AP, usually brings a large bag of Skittles to the game, so I grab a handful every now and then, and for some reason last year I tweeted out a picture of my catch, if you will, and Skittles are all different flavors, so I don't like to mix the flavors, so I just kind of separated them by color, and I have a tad of OCD, I guess, so it got some feedback, so I'm sure people don't really care, but I just seem to tweet out a picture every time I do that.
No, I kind of like it. I kept looking at it the first time, and I'm like, well, is there like a message in it, or is he just lining them up? Or because you had a lot of one color, fewer of others, I didn't know whether it was just a random grab and this is what you get. The problem with like Skittles and a hockey game, and I'm curious because you take breaks during the end of the periods. I know you're an AP writer, so you're having to write and write and write, but do you go back and replenish?
Yeah, no, I try not to do too much. The Nashville Predators are very generous with their food offerings at the intermissions too, in the media room. So I don't want to walk out of there 400 pounds at the end of the season. So I try to behave. But yeah, sometimes there's Skittles there. You just got to take that opportunity.
So hockey in Nashville. I was telling you, I've been to a couple of games. Took the fam to a game, I guess, last year, and it was a lot of fun. We saw Nashville whip on Winnipeg and lots of penalties and lots of guys in the penalty box, and my kids thoroughly enjoyed that part of it. But the sport has taken off in that city in a way that, I don't know, I couldn't have foreseen it. I've lived in the South my whole life. It's how much of it is just the winning, and how much of it is the way the Predators branded their product? How much of it is the fact that Nashville is a city that attracts people from all over the country there to live? And what do you attribute just hockey fever to? It's not a one-time thing. It's become more than just playoff fever.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of contributory factors, and you mentioned several of them. I've been here since the beginning of the Predators, and it was not like this early on. They struggled to draw fans. They didn't really have a large budget to bring in, great players. They ended up losing some good players that they drafted that they couldn't afford anymore. So, there was even a point at which it looked like the team was going to be sold and moved out of Nashville. But the new ownership, or the current ownership group, I should say, they've been in place for about 10 years now, are mostly local to Nashville. So I think the problem early on was not the Jack and Jill fan, the family, because they were buying tickets and the upper bowl was full, but they weren't getting a lot of the corporate sponsorship. The really expensive seats down low weren't being sold often. So the new ownership group infused some money. They spent some money on players. The population of Nashville has kind of exploded during this time too. with a lot of people maybe transplanted from some more traditional markets. And this all kind of coincided, you know, the predator's rise kind of was in the opposite direction of the Titans' decline. So I think a lot of people who had maybe spent their money on Titans tickets, you know, decided to put their money into Predators hockey. And as you mentioned, the Predators organization as a whole does a fantastic job of just game presentation. So there's always something going on, you know, at the intermissions with live music, or, you know, even in timeouts, you know, at TV timeouts, they're, you know, little skits with the mascots and music and everything else. So altogether, I think, you know, people began to realize, you know, combining that, the success with, you know, it's a pretty good time to, you know, good investment of your sporting dollars, I guess, if you will. And it's worked out great for them.
Yeah, I've been to NBA playoffs. I've been to a World Series game at Wrigley Field. I've been to NFL playoffs. I've been to an NFC Championship game. And I've been to one NHL hockey playoff games, Blackhawks, Blues, in St. Louis several years ago. It was intense. Game went to overtime. Blackhawks won it. I would argue that it was the most intense sporting event that I've ever been to. A rivalry game, obviously, but it was—I don't know—it was—it was—it wasn't like intense when I was there with my son who was pretty small at the time. I never felt like it was over his head or anything like that. There are a few things that sort of match the intensity of playoff hockey, I guess is what I'm getting at in a really long-winded way. You see it all the time. You've covered a lot of sports with AP. Where does, in your opinion, where does playoff hockey rank in terms of just intensity inside a building?
Oh, it's amazing. It's, you know, it seems like the players skate faster, they hit harder, there's more junk after the whistles or late in the, you know, after the puck's gone. You know, it's kind of an old saying in hockey, it's not hockey, it's playoff hockey. And there really is a difference. And, you know, over the course of an 82-game regular season, if they played that way, there'd be nobody left. The body just couldn't stand up to it. But I think one of the things that, you know, almost getting back to your first question about hockey and the atmosphere is, hockey doesn't always televise well. But if you just get people in the building and you know, regular season or playoffs, once they experience that, they want to come back. They want to get that feeling again, because just for some reason, it just doesn't translate as well, because I don't think on TV you get the appreciation for the speed or how hard these guys hit, or just some of the skills that they do with the puck while somebody's trying to hit them, or, you know, just how good of athletes that they are.
We're taping this on a Tuesday, like I said, so Monday night, PK Subban didn't make any friends in Denver and in the Colorado area with the hit on Nathan MacKinnon. He said Tuesday that he would do it again. How much of that is just him playing the role of villain a little bit to maybe affect the Avalanche's collective focus, or how much of that is just a rivalry between these two clubs?
Yeah, I mean, there really wasn't a rivalry between the two. You know, this is the first time they've matched up, and it's kind of seemed like, you know, over the years when Colorado's been good, Nashville hasn't, and, you know, maybe vice versa in the last few years. But that's kind of where rivalries are built, is in the playoffs. But I think, you know, kind of reading a little deeper into what PK said is, you know, sure, he's kind of sending a message to the Avalanche, but I think he's also sending a message to his team, you know, sending it to the Predators, you know, trying to be that leader, saying, you know, we were terrible last night. I'm gonna try and do what I can to get under the skin of Colorado's best player. MacKinnon's been the best player in the series on either team. So, you know, if he can talk and maybe get into MacKinnon's head a little bit, and also let his teammates know, hey, I've got this. I'm gonna do what it takes to try and right what was wrong, you know, in Game 3. I think that goes a long way too.
This team went to the Stanley Cup final last year. You've covered them quite a bit. Are they good enough to do it again? I know there's a lot of luck in playoff hockey that comes with it. There's a lot of momentum in playoff hockey that plays in. But from what you've seen, and it's very early in the playoffs, obviously, but is this a team that has the ability to go that far again?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look, they lost very little off of last year's team and even added a couple of more pieces. So you're right. Luck plays into it. You know, injuries are a huge issue in playoff hockey, and luck, and, you know, just there's so many different factors at work. But best in the regular season, and you know, that's all kind of gone and forgotten now. But there's a, you know, they're that good. They're that deep. It's not that they can, you know, an opponent can focus on one line. It's all four of their lines has the ability to score goals, and they have, you know, four of the best defensemen in the NHL. So, in addition to Pekarinen, who's probably going to win the Vezina Trophy as the NHL's best goalie this year. So, yeah, all the elements are there, but you have to put it into practice and make it work, or else, it could be an early end of the playoffs if they're not careful.
Subban not popular in Denver today, but he's incredibly popular in Nashville. Who's more popular from a professional athlete standpoint in that city? Is it Marcus Mariota, or is it P.K. Subban, or is there someone I'm missing?
No, I would say it's, probably Pekarinen, just because he's been here so long and kind of been, you know, the goaltender for the Predators for the past, you know, 10 years. Subban just came to Nashville at the start of last season, and he's flashy and, kind of mirrors, you know, the city of Nashville, and he's incredibly popular too. But, like I said earlier, the Titans, and they're did better last season, but, they've struggled for so long, and I guess that's how they ended up with Mariota, you know, with such a high draft pick. But, it's kind of hard to compare them because there's only the two major sports, and they're kind of intertwined. But I'd say, you know, Pekarinen is kind of the face of Nashville sports, and Mariota will probably take that over as long as the Titans kind of continue on their upward swing, which they look like they're on. But Subban definitely has his place, and he's hugely popular as well.
I think MLS is going to be a big hit in that city. It's every indication is they're going to have similar success in Nashville that perhaps they're even having in Atlanta when the MLS comes there in the next couple of years. As that city grows and it supports teams, it shows that it can support hockey. It's shown that it can support the NFL. Is there a market, not for the NBA because of Memphis down the road, but is there a market for perhaps even Major League Baseball, or is that not possible given the proximity to Cincinnati, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there could be. I don't know. You know, I think a lot of it almost goes back to what I was saying with the Predators, and is it going to be a low budget team who struggles to do anything, or is it going to be a team that where they can invest some money and get some players? Because, you know, I think like a lot of cities, Nashville loves a winner, and you know, as the population of Nashville continues to grow, I think you're going to, you know, have a fan base there. But you know, it goes to, you know, to corporate sponsorships and that. But yeah, there is kind of the, you know, radius to St. Louis or Cincinnati or Atlanta, where, you know, it's kind of a far drive, but not too far for people. But I think it would kind of cultivate a lot of baseball fans, interest to have one in town, because the Nashville Sounds, the AAA team in town, does extremely well. They got a new ballpark a couple of years ago, and that's proved to be a huge success. So I don't think it's a big step, but you know, I wouldn't see it happening for a while. I know there may be a couple of other cities that Major League Baseball would probably like to get into, or maybe back into, like Montreal, if they were ever to expand or had a team move.
Back to the Preds before we finish up, and again, I really appreciate your time. Kind of looking ahead to a hypothetical next round, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think Nashville's going to win the series. The Avalanche might win another game, but I think the Preds win the series. Who's a better matchup, the Winnipeg or Minnesota?
Well, Minnesota would be the much better matchup because they two of their better players are out. Ryan Suter, the former Predator defenseman, broke his leg late in the regular season. And I just learned today that Zach Parise has a broken sternum, and he's out for 3 to 5 weeks, I believe. So the Wild are kind of battered. The Jets and the Predators had some just track meets of games this year in the regular season. And boy, they're fun to watch and fun to cover, but boy, that team is going to be a handful for the Predators if they do end up meeting. And, you know, I'm all for it. I mean, it's, you know, kind of weird how the NHL does their playoffs with, you know, keeping it in the divisions within the conferences and not just kind of going 1-8 and then having the top top seed meet the lower remaining seed. But yeah, so, you know, basically Nashville and Winnipeg were the top two teams in the West this season, and to have one of them definitely going to be out by the second round is kind of disappointing. But, you know, I'm a hockey fan as well, in addition to covering the sports. So I'm really looking forward to covering that series if it does play out as a lot of us think it will.
On the other side, barring a comeback, it certainly looks like it's going to be Vegas and San Jose. Both of those teams lead their series. It's, I guess, did you see Vegas having this type of success, not only on the ice this year, but at the box office, the success they've had game after game, building momentum, building a fan base? Did it surprise you, or you know, you're a hockey guy, did you see that coming?
On the ice, I think everyone in the hockey world is shocked that they did so well. I mean, they paid whatever it was, $500 million for the team, so the NHL did, you know, make the expansion draft sort of favorable to them to get some good players, but no one saw this coming, you know, on the ice, because, you know, they weren't marquee players. They're, you know, just turned out to be good players who maybe were on some teams that they were a little bit buried behind some other talents, and, you know, they just needed some more ice time. But off the ice, I kind of had a feeling that they would have some success, because, you know, like Nashville, they kind of made it into a show, an experience. And you know, whether it's the locals or the people in town, you know, just to do other Vegas things, I kind of had a feeling that they would do really well. They sold all their season tickets in a very short amount of time. So off the ice, I'm not surprised at all. On the ice, along with just about everybody else, I was shocked and still am shocked at how much success they're having and how easy they're almost making it look.
Well, Jim, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for giving us some and for not calling me out on being a complete hockey idiot today. I had a lot of people that wanted us to talk Preds, and I was a little intimidated, but you made it easy, so thanks.
Yeah, no, anytime. I'm always happy to talk hockey, and if it brings in more fans, I'm all for it. I think it's a special sport, and there's not a huge fan base, but I think it's growing, and I think that's spectacular.
Well, thanks again. Enjoy your son's game. We'll talk to you soon, I hope.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, bye. Our thanks to Jim Diamond for joining us here on The Beer Garden. Let me tell you, The Beer Garden is also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. It's the freshest cuts that you'll find anywhere in the Oxford area. So I went in late last week, saw Greg Jones and the people there at LB's, got some fillets for the fam, and then I got the bone-in prime ribeye. Greg sent me a text. So was it any good? Yeah, just a little. So here's what he did. I had a thick bone-in ribeye. He Frenched the bone. Not French kissed the bone. Frenched the bone. Kind of like a tomahawk ribeye. Fantastic. You owe it to yourself to go into LB's, 2008 University Avenue. Ask for that. Do what I did. Get some of the jalapeno poppers wrapped in bacon, the little cream cheese. Fantastic. The fillets are great. The strip. They have briskets. Whatever you want, they have it there. All the fresh cuts. Pork, chicken, fresh seafood from the Gulf. All the sausages. You should try those. Chase's favorite is the ribeye sausage. I like that a lot as well. My favorite, if I'm being honest, is the free-range chicken jalapeno, the free-range chicken spinach feta. All of those are great. The Swayze sausage, which is beer, bacon, and cheese. It's hard to go wrong with that if you're taking some sausages out to the ballpark. This weekend for Ole Miss and Georgia, that's a good way to go. So that's at LB's, 662-259-2999. When you go into LB's, right there on the left, there's a beer fridge. Grab a six-pack. You can get the same or assorted, whatever. Tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack, which is normally $9, will just be $6 for you if you tell him that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. The Beer Garden is also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500s to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their workout, the writing, the production, the editing. It's all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian, Austin Barber, is a friend, is a partner in the firm, a friend of ours. So give them a call, see how great they are. You can send Austin an email. It's austin@strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail, which is sometimes called blackfish. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. With that, we're going to go back to our conversations with hockey. Josh Cooper joined us earlier in the week. We talked big picture hockey. We talked a little bit about the Predators, a little bit about the Penguins, the tragedy in Humboldt up in Canada, how that's impacted the hockey community, what it's like to cover hockey, a number of things. You don't have to be a hockey fan to enjoy this interview, but if you love hockey, you'll love this interview. So without further ado, here's Josh Cooper on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. All right, Josh, welcome into the show. I've looked forward to doing this. You and I don't think we have seen each other since you were covering Alabama, and I was probably covering, like, by then, I guess I was kind of a columnist covering a little bit of everybody, and we would see each other in SEC press boxes and stuff. If you had told me back then that you were going to be a big national hockey writer and a big NHL guy, I guess I should have known that, but I don't know that I would have, so... Silly me, I guess.
Exactly how I drew it up. I had always been a hockey fan for a long time. I mean, I went to games. I'm from New York City originally, and I went to games growing up at Madison Square Garden with my dad. He had season tickets, and I watched the New York Rangers play, and it was awesome. It was fun. I played growing up, and then I went to college and I went to Vanderbilt and did some internship work in Nashville with the Nashville Predators NHL team, which bizarrely ended up being the team that I ended up covering several years later as a beat reporter. And then just the 04-05 lockout hit, and I don't want to say I fell out of love with hockey per se, but when a sport loses an entire season, it certainly makes you take a step back and wonder, you know, why you watched it. Because also at the time, I didn't really understand the business of it super well. I was a college student. I was just very upset that there was no hockey on TV. And I really enjoyed college football, college basketball, and going to those games, college baseball as well. And just kind of started getting involved in doing coverage of those sports, especially in the SEC. And then got an internship with the Birmingham News in 2005 in the fall, and then got the job in Decatur covering Alabama, and had, I think it was like, I want to say 2 months of Mike Shula, and then Nick Saban. And I remember one of the big stories I did actually when I first got to Alabama was, I guess when Saban got hired, was I spoke to a sports economist at Vanderbilt, who I still to this day believe is a very smart guy, and it's someone who I've used a lot for stories. And he was like, "Oh yeah, you know, Alabama overpaid for him. Like, it's not what you should pay for a college coach." And that was like the whole big story. and look at where we are now. 12 years later. Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't alone in thinking that, but you know, boy, we
well. At the time, I mean, remember, he was a flight risk. I mean, he was a guy who basically, he was a flight risk. He was a guy who couldn't stay in one location for that long. I would pick up and go. He had only won one national championship at that point. And yes, his teams at LSU were quite good. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he wasn't known as someone who, you know, I mean, like, he was known as an excellent coach, but not what he ended up becoming, where Alabama, where he sort of burnished his legacy. So overall, I just remember that. And it's kind of funny thinking back to that and just the amount of weird calls I would get from, or emails I would get from Alabama fans. And, I remember during that coaching search getting a call from someone associated with Jerry Glanville saying that Jerry Glanville was interested in the Alabama gig and offered me a chance to interview Jerry Glanville if I put his name out there. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they are not looking at him. They're like, but don't you want to interview Jerry? I'm like, no.
Not, like, not on those terms. Yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then I ended up getting a job in Vancouver with the Olympic Committee in 2009, 2010, and did a bunch of freelance work up there covering hockey games. There was a way to kind of supplement my income a little bit and got back into it. And then after the games were over, I moved to Nashville, didn't have a job, but just knew I had a bunch of good connections in the city, just kind of through having gone to college there and my time in the SEC, and then got the job covering the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean. Did that for 4 years. Then when they decided to pivot to a different model, I guess, or I don't know, they basically had us all reapply for our jobs, and I ended up not getting my job back, but fortunately at the time I was closing in on a position with Yahoo Sports, and then became a national writer at Yahoo, editor, and got to cover a lot of really cool things there, had a huge platform, and it was fun. I got to meet a lot of very interesting people around the league. I mean, I got to as well with the Preds, or covering the Preds, but Yahoo was sort of took it to a new level. And I mean, being a national writer in hockey, especially with some of those crazy locations you go to, is pretty fun. I mean, it's really enjoyable. And moved out to Los Angeles just because we had two hockey teams here. And then Yahoo decided that they wanted to go another direction with their hockey blog coverage and got a bunch of us, myself included. And currently I'm just taking care of my 6-month-old and doing some freelance work for the Kings and various other organizations, and living the good life out in LA. So no real complaints. Hockey world's been fun to be around, and certainly a different spot, Neil, from I guess when you last saw me, where I was in my mid-20s scarfing down hot dogs at Brian Denny Stadium and drinking Mountain Dew, and I don't even remember, my whole life was different back then, pretty much.
I think it was for all of us back then. Looking back on it, those were fun days. You didn't realize how fun they were, but they were kind of fun. But we were kind of those two beats combined, and then when they intermingled, we were pretty crazy. And maybe that's just sports media in general, but there were a lot of late nights in all those groups.
There were tons of late nights, and what was so interesting back then is just thinking back to it was, it's so crazy in the sense of, I just remember you go to bed at night and you wake up in the morning and check every newspaper just to try to see who wrote what story that day and who broke what story. Cause there was, yes, there was sort of like, you know, there could be a news break late at night, but the print model just ruled everything and the online model didn't. And I remember just always waking up and going through every paper that covered Alabama and the national publications as well, just to see who had what story on what, and it was always a fascinating experience overall. And thinking back to it now, just with the instantaneous news breaks and such, I mean, you know, you find out a story basically essentially through your Twitter alerts if you follow the right people, and or I guess have the right alerts for the right people. And it's certainly not the same anymore. There's no question about it. But yeah, I mean, at the time it was so interesting. I mean, I'm from New York City, and it was certainly a leap of faith for me to move down there. But it was quite the experience overall, just being around Nick Saban, to me at least, at the beginning of his, I guess, epic rise at Alabama, and just kind of seeing the jump that they had from year one when he was there, which they were a fine team, to year two, where they were times like dominant without you know, I guess they had a good recruiting class after his first full year. But I mean, it's still to this day, and I feel like I'm a little more experienced and been around a lot of coaches in different types of leagues. But I mean, to me, he's still the best coach I've ever been around. And it's interesting that that's still the case for me, because I feel like I've been around a lot of different championship type guys, but just the way he handled everything, his detail, his preparation. I mean, it's hard being a college football coach. You have so many, and it goes from any coach. I mean, in college football, you have to know so many different things going on with your team. It's how many players are on a roster? Was like 80 or something, or 90? Like, I don't even know how many anymore.
Yeah, it's 85.
I mean, it's 85, yeah. I mean, you have that versus an NHL roster, which is like 22 people. It's completely different. And you just have to know so much. And just the detail he had and attention to detail was pretty incredible. So, I mean, there's that. And there's also the fact that he did say goodbye to me when I left. So he did know who I was, which made me feel good. So maybe that's why I sing his praises instead of, you know, I'm not like everyone else who despises him. but yeah, it was definitely, it's like kind of funny how it was all I knew for a while, and now it's like covering Alabama is like the one thing that's like super different on my resume. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What's interesting to me is, you know, I've covered the NFL, I've covered a lot of college football, obviously a lot of college basketball, I've covered been around enough Major League Baseball to sort of have an idea of how beat coverage works. I really have no idea how like NHL beat coverage works or what it's like to cover hockey day in, day out. I would think the NHL, the access is pretty good. What's it like just kind of covering that sport? Because I, honest to God, have no idea.
Well, first off, it's cold. you definitely go to some really cold places, places that, I mean, where the temperatures are colder than you have ever experienced, probably. I mean, I remember I once went to Edmonton and I looked out my window and I saw this like boat frozen into the river, like something that probably would have been really cool in the summer, but obviously you can't do it in the winter. I'm just like, oh my God, like I cannot believe how cold is it outside. And there's this thing, I guess it's called a Chinook. In Calgary, where like the warm air kind of blows over the mountains. It's sort of like the warm air, I think it's from the Pacific Ocean, blows over the mountains and warms things up in the winter. Up to like 50 degrees there or whatever. And I guess they don't get that in Edmonton. I remember getting to my hotel that day, because like Calgary and Edmonton are just a drive, like it's about a 3-hour drive. I remember getting to my hotel in Edmonton. I was like, yeah, you know, it got a lot colder. Didn't you guys have that Chinook? And they go, it never gets warm here. We haven't had a good melting in ages. And I'm just like, a good melting? Like, what is this? But I mean, I think the thing that really stuck out to me when I made the transition from doing college sports to the NHL specifically is, I mean, these are grown people, like grown-ups per se, that have their own thoughts, their own sort of way of going about things, in the sense of like, I can go to a locker room and carry on a conversation with someone until they want to leave. And yes, you know, a PR guy sometimes stands there and wants to sort of move things along, which, you know, in a lot of cases can be understandable. I mean, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to make sure you get everybody you want, but I could sit around and talk to, Shea Weber about his fantasy football team or something like that, or, you know, talk to someone about, you know, their family, how they're going, or what they did on vacation over the summer. And I feel like in college sports, specifically, like you can't do that just because of the way the access is set up. Cause there's a lot of protection. So it was kind of funny when I first started covering the Preds, the most I learned was when I would go into opposing teams' locker rooms and seeing how the other beat writers would just chit chat with the players with their recorder off, and I was like, "Oh, I see how this works." And that really helped me kind of understand how to just get relationships with people and realize, you know, like I can text this guy when I need to, and you know, if I have a good relationship with that person, they're not going to burn me. They're not going to rat me out to the PR guy. And then and then get yelled at or whatever. So you have that. There's just so many layers. I think it's with any pro, and it's probably true for a lot of pro sports. There's so many layers between teams, agents, and just players and different people. Like everyone, you know, it's like you sort of have the team that's trying to push their message. You have the player that maybe off message. You have the agent that's trying to get the player's message to you, which I think is pretty fascinating for the most part. And really, it's I think one thing that I also found super interesting about hockey is that you can people sort of know if you're can tell if you're a hockey person, so to speak, and that like if you can speak the language of the game. You know, there's a lot of markets where you may not, I mean, there's a lot of really excellent reporters who cover hockey for sure. But, I think there are some markets where it's definitely, you get the sense that maybe it's not someone who lived and breathes hockey. And, I feel like there's just sort of a lot of people out there who, kind of when they talk to, you know, reporters or whatever, I mean, they kind of, they know if you're a hockey person or not, and it doesn't really count for one way or the other, but I guess that's sort of there's kind of this sort of network like that where it's like, oh, it's a real hockey person or not. And, I mean, you may have this in every sport too, but there's also certainly, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, an old boys network there of just people who
sure
have been around the game for a long time. And just, you know, breaking into that's hard. There's no question about that. And I think it's like that in any sort of sport. But I mean, ultimately, I mean, what I enjoyed and still do enjoy about it is just the fact that, you know, at the level of pro sports, I mean, you know, there's no, oh, you know, graduation rates are this. There's no kind of, oh, we have this sort of higher calling of trying to do this with players or that for players. I mean, at the end of the day, it's simply all about
winning,
making money. I don't think they hide from that. Winning and making money.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, that's what I kind of appreciated about it, was just the fact that, you know, I as much as I love covering college sports, and yes, so many players from college sports don't end up going to the NBA and don't end up going to the NFL. At the end of the day, I mean, it's a big enterprise. There's no question about that. But I still think it's trying to figure out its footing in regards to, you know, there's always that debate of how do you pay players? How do they get a piece of the pie or whatever? And with the NHL and covering pro sports, I mean, we know what it is. Like, players want to get paid, and organizations want to win, and they also want to make money. So I feel like there was really no hiding from that at all. But so there's that. And I mean, there's also, again, I think you get this in any sport too, but there's just such a crazy, bizarro culture in hockey that there's this weird sort of, you know, there are certain mega fans who are like obsessed with different types of refs, and you have fans who are, you know, just nostalgic for certain parts of the game. You know, it's a very nostalgic sport, and it's very, and it's also, you have the international element in it too, that I think that you don't get in a ton of sports in North America, where you have a lot of people from Canada. And you have, you know, several people from Russia, Sweden, Finland. I know here in Los Angeles, the Kings' best player is from Slovenia. It's just so different in that sense. And it's certainly a different sport. And, you know, the other thing too is that it's also not the cream of the crop. You know, it's not the biggest thing in the United States, but it certainly is in Canada. So it's all, the NHL is always trying to figure out its footing and how to kind of bring in new fans, yet also keep the old ones. And it's just a really interesting kind of world, so to speak. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that I'm able to kind of jump in and people welcome me relatively quickly. And I've been really, really enjoyed being involved in it. It's a lot of fun overall.
I want to get to a couple of hockey things before I let you go. One, you did a story, I guess it's 2-3 days ago, about Jarrett Stoll of the Kings and his reaction to the tragedy, and there's no other word for it, in Humboldt with the amateur team, the youth, the semi-pro team that all the kids and the players and broadcasters, there was, I think, 17, 18 deaths. It obviously has resonated throughout hockey because so many of those guys that play in the NHL, whether they're from Canada or not, they can relate to the bus rides and that camaraderie that comes with that and late nights on buses and that kind of thing. I was just curious. I know you're around some teams. You certainly have seen a lot. How much has that tragedy in Canada impacted the guys at the very highest level?
Well, a lot, because so many guys. The crazy thing about hockey is that everybody knows everyone to some degree, and it's just insane how small the world is there. It's kind of almost become a cliche when you hear the term, oh, the hockey world is so small, but like it legitimately is absolutely tiny. And it's in part because just it's not a huge sport where tons of people play. And also the fact that Canada is not the biggest country in the world. And you just pretty much everyone there plays hockey and everyone seems to have some connection to someone hockey. And I mean, it's crazy to think that out here in Southern California, so you have in San Diego, Dallas Eakins, who's the coach of the San Diego Gulls, hosted one of the assistant coaches for the Humboldt Broncos earlier in the year. So he has a connection to the Humboldt Broncos to that degree. Jarrett Stoll helped fund, he's from Yorkton, Saskatchewan, and helped fund a comfort wing at the hospital, a comfort fund for a wing at the hospital, where a lot of the players are still getting treated. And that's just out here. And that's just the two guys I've been able to write stories about. I'm sure there's other connections for other guys, and it's just a tiny community. And it's really hit home for a lot of players because, I mean, I've been fortunate enough in my career where I've been able to ride buses with players in the sense of, you know, I've flown the charter with the Preds. I did so with the Kings this year. And then you take a bus to the charter, and then you get on the charter, you fly, and then you get off the charter in your new location, you get on a bus and you go somewhere. And I mean, yeah, it's always in the back of your mind, you know, what if something happens when you're on this charter bus, that's going somewhere. And I mean, cause look, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, but you know, we're not all bulletproof, and it's a terrifying thing in the sense that we've all been there riding buses, not so much, in some sense, doing for these guys playing junior hockey, but also they're still riding buses. And if you go down to the American Hockey League, which is the top minor league for the NHL, or the top feeder system, they ride buses all over the country. So it's something that hits home because I think everybody kind of puts themselves in that situation because again, they're still riding buses. Technically, they can just see themselves being involved in that. And it's a terrifying thing. And there's also sort of the sense of these kids were so young and you just, everyone remembers just being a young hockey player, riding the buses through whatever tiny province or tiny state, or I guess whatever province or whatever state they rode buses in, and they just put themselves in those shoes. So it's certainly been something that's hit home for a lot of players and has really resonated, it seems to me, globally in a lot of ways.
Back to the game for a minute. I told Chase I was going to ask this. You mentioned Nick Saban and being the very best college coach. I don't know if there's any question about it. I think he's the best college coach ever. It brings to the topic dynasties and dominance and that type of thing. As we tape this, it's Wednesday afternoon. It's 2:52 out there, 4:52 here. I say that because people will hear this tomorrow, and by that time the Penguins will either be up 3-1 or tied 2-2 with the Flyers. But what makes that franchise, this particular team that's going for a three-peat, what makes them so good? What is it about them that is so dominant? And, you know, how would you compare them to the, you know, the New England Patriots, the Golden State Warriors, the dominant teams in the other leagues, the other professional leagues? I mean, what is it about them? And then along those lines, do you anticipate them winning another Stanley Cup, or are they more vulnerable now than they've been the last couple of years?
Well, Neil, to answer the first part of your question, they were really, fortunately for them, bad in 2003-04 and got the number two pick in the draft that year, who turned into Evgeny Malkin, who's in the playoffs, he's a matchup nightmare. And then in 2005, they won the most random draft lottery you can win and ended up with Sidney Crosby, who is probably one of the 10 greatest players in the NHL. So they have been unbelievably lucky in that regard, and that they were bad, and also they were bad before then too, so they had a higher shot at landing him, but they were bad at the right times and they got the right guys, and there's in that sense is lucky. But in hockey you have to build a team around them, and they've been fortunate that they've gotten just so many guys who can fill in big roles and big positions. But really, to me, the tone gets set by the leadership of Crosby, specifically of Evgeny Malkin. They've added the right guys over the years, and Phil Kessel, and it was a great American-born scorer, one of the best of the last 10 years or so, and several other players. And, I think that certainly helped. They've been pretty lucky also beyond the fact they got those two players, and that you really do have to be lucky to win the Stanley Cup. Everything, you have to get all the breaks, you have to get all the injuries sort of to not happen to your team, because there are certain teams that can be railroaded by injuries. I mean, the team they're playing in the Philadelphia Flyers, I'm not sure if one of their best players, Sean Couturier, is going to go tonight, but I mean, he was injured in a practice and it's an absolute fluke play. So, you have to be healthy, and they've made the right moves and they've done the right things and put the money in the right places. I think that when you ask about dynasties and how to compare them to other teams, in other sports, maybe you could say New England, only because they've both had to really contend with a hard salary cap type situation where you have to make some really tough decisions on some popular players. And in the NHL, there is so much parity. And it's funny, just now that I'm thinking about this, I mean, Pittsburgh went into overtime in Game 7, the Eastern Conference Final last year against Ottawa, where they were literally one shot away from not going to the Stanley Cup Final. And it could have happened. I mean, in overtime, really, it's a crapshoot. Anything can happen. So I would say maybe closer to the New England model, only because of the salary cap. And I know the NBA is a salary cap also. You mentioned the Warriors, but it seems that you can be very heavy on talent and lower on depth and still win in that league. Whereas in hockey, it's more like football, where you just need the full complement of a healthy team to be able to win. And I mean, what New England has done, I mean, whatever we all think of the Patriots and just how they operate, I mean, it's pretty incredible. They've been able to win at this level in that league for as long as they've been able to. And I think the Penguins are really no different. And for a while before them, the Chicago Blackhawks, that are getting a little long in the tooth these days, missed the playoffs this year. I mean, they were the gold standard too. So even though not a ton of teams have won in the NHL, or I guess different teams have won the NHL the last several years, it's still really hard to win on a consistent basis in that league. And that's why I would compare Pittsburgh more so to New England, just because the amount that they've been able to do it at the level they have, with the decisions that they've had to make and some of the players they've had to cut ties with, and even Chicago before them, in the NHL. I mean, it's hard, and they've been able to do it, so good on them.
Well, listen, I really appreciate your time. I know that you didn't have to give a half hour of your time here today, and I appreciate it a lot.
Yes, I did.
You did? You had to?
Yes, I did.
Someone made you?
Yes. No.
Oh,
why not? It's fun. I like good conversations.
Well, if it's okay, we might check back with you. We'll wait till they get to the Stanley Cup. I know a lot of people here are hoping Nashville's back in it. We'll see. I'm hoping they are, because that was a really cool story last year, and it was just sort of, as a kid who's grown up in the South and lived in the South, it was sort of fun to see hockey in the South be such a big deal, even though I can watch hockey and I'm still not completely sure what icing is, but I watch it and it was just fun. It was so cool. And when they lost to the Penguins, I was so disappointed, but I got over it pretty quickly, but it was still just kind of fun. We all just, everybody seemed to sort of embrace that team. So I'm sitting here sort of hoping it happens again.
It definitely could. It's kind of funny. Like, I feel like you have a unique perspective. Anyone who's, you know, lived in the South essentially for a number of years. I mean, it's kind of weird seeing an NHL team be that good yeah. in the South and fans get behind it. I mean, it's not normal. Like, in, you know, in regards to like just traditional American society where you had the original six up in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Of all these other teams, but it's cool, and they put their own spin on it. And it's like going to a college football game.
Yeah, well, because I know the arena's full of people that are just like me that are like, oh, I think that was a really good play, but I'm not sure. And then all of a sudden there's a goal and you're like, yes, you watch the replay and you're like, was that planned or was that an accident? It's fun. I mean, it's like you said, and then I've been to one NHL playoff game. And I told Jim Diamond this earlier. It was the most intense sporting event I've ever attended in my life. It was Blues Blackhawks in St. Louis. Blackhawks won in overtime, and man, it was incredible. I mean, it was awesome. It was just intense, and you know, we had great seats, and guys are getting banged into the glass, and every shot in the overtime is potentially the game winner, and everyone is just on edge, and then boom, there's a breakaway and a goal, and it's over, and the arena just goes quiet, and it was like, wow, that was intense, man. I mean, I walked out of there thinking that was unbelievable, and that was just like a first round matchup.
Yeah, the whole sudden death thing is, and also, I remember a few years ago, I covered Anaheim, Chicago in the playoff, and it was, I think it went to three overtimes. And when you get to the trip, the third overtime, these guys are dragging up the ice. I mean, it's like, it was remarkable just seeing how tired these guys were, going from kind of full of energy and getting ready to rock to all of a sudden just, they just couldn't move. And then when the players scored a goal, I think it was, God, I forgot who it was. I want to say it was Marcus Kruger or whatever scored the goal to win it. You're just shocked that the puck went in. Like, you're just like, what? It's not supposed to happen. We're in the third overtime.
Yeah.
But it's a great game, but it's funny though. You asked earlier just about things about covering the NHL. There's two other things I forgot is, one is coffee. I didn't drink coffee before I covered the league, and wow, that changed my life. The other is just lots of 5:30 a.m., lots of 4 a.m. wake-up calls, just because, geez. And also, you just have to get up and go to the next game because you sometimes have back-to-backs. And lastly, Marriott points.
Yes.
I have not paid for a vacation in 5 years or six, no, 7 years actually, because of all my travels. So I don't know if you're a sponsored podcast, but I'm very appreciative of Marriott points. They've gone the distance for me in regards to vacations.
Well, throughout my career, because of where I started covering Auburn, and I was at a Hilton Garden Inn, I am a Hilton whore. I do have a large number of Marriott points, but Hilton is Hilton's my jam. I could basically diagram a Homewood Suites, a Hilton Garden Inn, a Hampton Inn and Suites, a Hampton Inn, or a Doubletree in my sleep. I could close my eyes and draw one, and it would look precisely what they all look like. So yeah, I feel
well. There's a wonderful Hilton on Torrey Pines out here in San Diego. If you want to take your family there, and there is also one I saw on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Yeah. So, well, there you go.
Two wonderful properties. Yeah.
All right, Josh. Thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
All right. Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
Bye. Our thanks to Josh for joining us on the Beer Garden. Hope you guys enjoyed that today. A lot of you, a few of you asked for a hockey podcast. So I hope you enjoyed that one. It's kind of fun for me. I don't talk a lot of hockey. I like to watch some playoff hockey. And it was kind of fun to talk to a couple of guys who know a ton of hockey. I think they both are agreeable to joining us down the road. So if you enjoyed it, send them a little message on Twitter. Let both of them know that you appreciate their time and you enjoyed their time on the Beer Garden. That'll make it a little easier for them to come back on as the spring progresses and we get closer to the Stanley Cup Finals. We'll be back next week on the Beer Garden. NFL draft, Major League Baseball will be almost a month old. Maybe the winter will have gone away enough that we'll be able to see enough baseball to start having a little bit of a clue as to what's going on. The NBA playoffs will be in full swing. We'll be approaching the Western and Eastern Conference semifinal rounds. So a lot to possibly get to on the Beer Garden. Until then, our thanks to Jim Diamond, our thanks to Josh Cooper, our thanks to the Oxford Crystal, to LB's Meat Market, to SPM, to Strategic Partners of Media, I should say, to Journey Business Solutions, to Tuna Chase of Charters, to everyone who sponsors this podcast. We appreciate you so very much. So until then, have a great weekend. Talk to you next week on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden.